Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the TetraCast, RPG Site's weekly podcast. I'm your host. My name is Brian Vitale. Joining me, we have Adam Vitale.
Hello.
Josh Torres.
Hi.
Mikhail Mednani.
Hello.
And Chaman Wu.
How's it going?
I was like, why did that order seem weird? Oh, it's because Adam changed his like username in the chat here, so now he's listed first. I'm like, why is Adam first? Okay, so now he's first. All right, but welcome to another episode of TetraCast. No word from James. We'll see if he shows up or not. It's kind of a quieter week, so if he's out a week, you know, a week's off are always good. We have a few things to talk about this week. We had a couple of smaller little streaming events. We had the Level 5 Vision 2026, the quote-unquote craftsmanship stream. We have the Triple I stream put on by publisher Evil Empire. We've talked about them before. They're behind the new Rogue Prince of Persia. They've done some of the Dead Cells DLC. They had a streaming event for independent, you know, developers to share off some progress of games in development. And then we also have some features that went up, not last weekend, but from 2 weekends ago. PAX East was held, so we got some features up on the site from that event from some contributors. So we're going to kind of touch on all of those areas. We also do have a Starfield update to talk about, which I have a few thoughts on. Not a lot, but just a few. So yeah, it's going to be a little bit of a hodgepodge. We're going to touch back on Crimson Desert. But to start out, we're not going to do any of those. We're going to start out with a game that Chow listed that he stated he had been playing that Josh was very interested in hearing Chow's thoughts on. It's a game I don't know much about, so you'll have to tee me up. It is The Weeping Swan. All I know is that this is like a remake, or I think I know, a remake or reimagining of an existing game or something like that. But please correct me where I'm wrong and kind of tee us up. What is The Weeping Swan? And where does it stand in terms of its release on Steam, and what are your thoughts on it so far?
So this game is a sequel to The Hungry Lamb. We talk about this game probably like almost 2 years now, I think. It's been like time really flies. I think it's been 2 years since the original game came out. The Hungry Lamb, I think we talk about this, is where...
Yeah, we did.
Where this guy is like a human trafficker to bring these kids to this other land for this rich noble, but his plans kind of change as he grew attached to these kids, because he kind of realized that he's not selling these kids to rich nobles being adopted. He's selling to some guy that has a fetish of eating people. So his morale's kind of like, it got, you know, he's trying to be a good person.
Just yeah, it's worth mentioning that like this is like a period piece, like in like ancient China. This is made by a Chinese studio, Zero Creation Games, and The Hungry Lamb was like highly like very well received, both over in China, and seems to have found like a strong international audience as well. Like I think the last time we mentioned it like crossed over 1 million copies, and that's very, very, very good for games in the genre, visual novel / adventure genre. So that like this was one of those like breakout hits that people in the West didn't really know about as much, I'd say.
Take it away, Joe. Thank you for taking it out, Josh.
Yeah, I was trying to let Josh finish, so I didn't know.
I'm good. Yeah.
Okay, but yeah, it's, you know, it's been a while, and so this is a sequel to it, a direct sequel to it, but it's about different characters. And to give you some more background, it takes place in the end of Ming Dynasty, kind of like the same period as Wuchang that we used to play on this podcast. So the atmosphere is extremely depressing because there was that. You know, it takes place after like an epidemic of some sort. But the sequel is not really, you know, it's about the same type of things. It's about a completely different thing. So you're basically playing this character named Fang Xio. He's like, the game kind of starts with him having, you know, like amnesia and some kind of disease. He called it the Beast Affliction, which causes him to hallucinate and stuff. And sometimes you start to think this hallucination is creating this fantasy for him as well. So he can't determine if it's reality or, you know, it's fantasy. So there's lots of things that this disease. It feels more like a convenient plot device more than anything. But the beginning kind of shows that, you know, he starts seeing, like, people as animals, you know, like, or maybe you would call them as demons, like these, like soldiers that are, like, appeared to, like, demons to him, right? And, but anyways, like, this game has two separate storylines. His past, because I said that he has amnesia, right? So this seems more like a plot device where every time when there's something important comes up, his amnesia just goes away and he remembers, you know, this thing, right? And
that'll be... Yeah, gets flashbacks.
Yes.
Something sparks his memory or some sort.
Yeah, so there's two separate chapters of storyline, his past and the present, right? So basically the storyline is a lot more, I don't know, like, it's a lot more contained, I guess. He basically goes, like, as he leaves, you know, the city's basically being, like, invaded by rebels. I believe they're called the Tartar. I don't know if that's the exact pronunciation for it, but, you know, and then the thing is that one of the things that triggers his memory is that he opens this jar trying to find a hiding spot, and he finds this girl that looks like the love of his life as a little girl. And he don't know why he's seeing this. And so it basically goes to his flashback, his childhood memories, right? About meeting this girl, right? Who was considered the love of his life. But the love of his life can't really exist because the storyline says that she committed suicide, like, right at the beginning, right? It's like she's already dead. There's no way this could be her, right? So, like, if you choose to get the bad ending, you kind of get clues that, okay, this thing does not, like, this girl does not exist. This has to be a ghost, because every time you get a bad ending, it's like no one could see her, and she's, like, calling for you. It's like, help, help! And it's like, how come no one can see her? It's like, oh, well, I guess I'm already dead, right?
And I guess to clarify, like, it's not like when you're saying bad ending, there's options as you're going throughout the story that leads to a bad end. It's not like at the very end that there's a bad end.
Yeah, it's like, these are like bad ends that you just make all these choices where you get killed. And I think they're really poorly designed. And you also would purposely choose for them to get the trophies, I guess, you know? I think it's like, they're not, you know, it's, the choices are usually like this. It's like, go left, go middle, go right. How am I supposed to know which way is safe, right? And the route that you assume is safe will still get you killed. It's like playing Road to Emperor's Way, you know?
Well, I haven't played a lot of adventure games, but the ones I have played, like the real classic King's Quest, which I know is, you know, a Western developer, but it is kind of, like, it feels like it's from an era of games where, like, trial and error was a little bit more common. Like, you would go one direction or use one thing, and you might end up dying to reasons that you could not have possibly predicted, but then you just reload right away, and then you kind of make the other choice. Does this game allow for that sort of thing? Like, you see a bad end, then you kind of step back and then go back on the right path?
Like, this game offers a lot of choice. You can even... There's a flow chart right in there, and you could just click on the flow chart to go exactly where you want to be in the story. You could even skip all the way to the ending if you just want to go straight to the ending, too, with the flow chart, right? So
okay, that's like, as in, like, you start the game and then you can, if you get access to this flowchart, you can just skip to the ending if you want, or
yes, it asks you, do you want to skip everything? It's like, and then just
okay, that's weird. Okay. I haven't heard of that. Okay, that one.
Yeah, you could. But, yeah, the flowchart lets you skip to everything. You can even watch that, and there's even like a bonus chapter if you want to skip ahead and read the bonus chapter. The bonus chapter is basically like about the characters of the previous game, right? Yeah, they're still here, and, you know, you kind of know that they have, you know, their true ending from the original, if you're kind of curious what happened to them, right?
It's also worth mentioning that, like, this system, like, one, it's a pretty common, like, you know, branching path system that, like, as you guys mentioned, where, you know, it branches can lead to a bad end, sometimes very abruptly, and you can redo that choice. And this is also in The Hungry Lamb as well, where there were choices in there that led to a bad end. But I think one of the things that I haven't, you know, finished the first game yet, and I've been kind of reading, like, the impressions of this one from people, and it seems like I don't know what it is in this game, but there seems to be some sort of, like, disconnect between, like, how this game conveys stuff that happens at its bad ends and its overall theming that people are really not jiving with compared to the developer's previous game, which was, you know, well, pretty praised.
Yeah, like, one of the things that I would call this game, I think it's like the Squid Game Season 2 of sequels. I'm not sure you ever watched Squid Games.
I'm going to need some clarification.
I have not, but I exist on the internet, so there you go.
I do know that people like Season 2 less than Season 1. That's what I got out of there.
Yeah, so Season 2 and Season 3 of Squid Game is like one story arc. It's twice the length of the first season, but, you know, there's no shock value because everything is already done in the first one, and then it just feels like a more lengthy sequel that doesn't really, you know, it's more, but not better, you know what I'm saying? Because this game is twice as long as the first game, right? It's like, there's like 19 chapters, and, you know, it's very lengthy, right? Yeah, much more lengthier. So, but the thing is that what makes people dislike this game is that there's two heroines in this game. The first one is the one that he said that it was the love of his life. And the other one is this girl, is an other Coruscant that he met in his younger years. And the other girl is just being completely mistreated in this game. And I think this is what's driving a lot of negative reviews, because he would never give her any time of the day, no matter what event it is. And this is what kind of causes all those negative reviews. It's like this character is just constantly being mistreated in every way possible. And she basically has the love of gold, like the heart of gold. It's just that she's just a Coruscant, you know? Let's say, okay, maybe a different comparison. Have you watched the Apicari Diaries?
Yeah, yes.
This game is basically...
Apothecary Diaries.
Okay,
yes. This game, it's like, okay, that other girl, her storyline is basically, imagine Mao Mao is backstory, but she didn't have those skills of a doctor, so she had to be the Coruscant,
okay,
trying to win, you know, back life, right? Because her backstory is pretty sad. So basically, the main character, when he became a scholar, he basically meets her, like, because she, like, he finds her like crying in the street, and he's like, "Why are you crying?" And she basically, like, her news of her dead mom, and so she's crying. So the main character's like, "It's like, damn, that sucks. Well, here, have some money." And he basically gave a shit ton of money, right? And because he believes that if she keeps crying in there all day, she's not going to make any money as a curse and back, right? And so he's like, here, have a lot of money. And she's like, I can't accept this. I didn't do anything, right? And it's like, but she still took it, right? And then in the end, she follows the main character back home because she felt that she owes him something, right? And because of this one act of kindness, she completely fell in love with the main character, right? But the main character has no feelings for her. He only has feeling for that girl that I said that is dead in the beginning.
Established in the beginning, yeah.
Yeah, he said that he loves that girl because, you know, he met her as a kid, and that, you know, he wants to find out what happened to her. Because what happened, like, this is a very backup, like, screwed up, like, story. So basically, when he was a kid, he got adopted by his uncle. Because their parents were just...
Should establish, like, if people are still listening and want to, like, read this game, like, potentially there might be spoilers. I don't know exactly how
deep you're getting into it. Okay. There's some dark stuff in here. So, for warning for audience, there's some dark stuff. Okay. So, if they don't want it, they might have to skip this, like, this entire segment about this game. Because... Okay. So, basically, he was being adopted by his uncle. And there was this little girl that, you know, that was older than him, took him, ran away, but they still end up getting caught by his uncle's, like lackeys. So anyways, he got adopted, but she got separated. And the reason why that the uncle also took her is because she was supposed to be a concubine, but she was only, like, 11 years old. So she basically is the main character's stepmom pretty soon, right?
Okay.
So that's a very messed up relationship. So, next thing you know, it's like, the reason why the uncle needs it, because he doesn't have a male heir, and he just can't seem to get his thing up. And they believe that she has the right capable zodiac sign, and because he's so superstitious, that's why they took this girl in, and they were just waiting for her come of age, and then, you know, hoping to make a baby, and then he becomes the male hero, or something like that. That's kind of like what they were going for. But the good news is, Uncle kicked the bucket before shit like this happened. The bad news, the aunt completely hates her guts. So as soon as, you know, he's dead, she basically was sent as a curse or something. And now she's completely gone out of the main character's life. And now the main character's like, where is she? It's like, that's kind of like how the story goes.
Okay.
Right? And so anyways, he meets that. We go back to the other flashback with the other heroine, right? That one act of kindness, you know, and so she followed him home, and she kind of gives up her, like, her backstory. She kind of, like, wants to sleep with the main character, but the main character is like, no, it's like, no, it's like, why? It's like, I can't think of anything other than this one girl, which is, you know, that girl that he was separated from, right? And that storyline is that basically the other girl basically tells her that, you know, there's the top curse and that has a similar name to your childhood friend. And so now the story completely goes to where the main character wants to find out how to get to the top curse, right? So this is kind of like why people kind of hate
this story character. Sounds like a mess, like the way that you're describing it. It's kind of weird, like, in terms of, like, it feels very, I don't know, not misguided. Misguided is not the word, but it feels very, like, what it's presenting to people initially and what it serves up as, like, the follow-up from its initial serving feels like a weird swerve to, like, what people might have, you know. It led people on thinking it was going to be one thing, and it totally went to, like a sharp right turn into another thing. That's what it sounds like.
Was the original game so, like, invested in, like, love, I don't know if triangle's the right word, love geometries like this?
But, anyways, but the second heroine...
Okay. Brian was asking, like, I don't remember Hungry Lamb was more like of a journey type of thing. But it wasn't really, too much, like, romance dynamics from what I remember.
But there's like, I said there's two story, right? The present is that, you know, they're being invaded by these, like, Tartars or whatever, and he sees them as, like, demon people, and he's constantly trying to run away. So the main story is he's trying to run away from them, while the flashback is about these curses that he was in love with, right? Like, one of them is the childhood girl that he met, and the other girl is this prostitute, or, I mean, not prostitute, I guess it's a different term for her, but... It's like the main character just won't give her the time of the day, no matter what it is. But she is in love with the main character because the one act of kindness that really helped her, because she said that, you know, she was so bad at the first day of her job. It's like some random guy just kidnapped her, locked her in, took all her money, so she made nothing, and then probably raped her, and then the main character's like, okay. It's like, how did you get away then? It's like, I waited for that guy to fall asleep and just ran away. And the main character didn't do any of that. It's like, he just gave her this money out of, you know, without anything, and took her in, and because of that, she's in love with him, right? But she just never gets any attention.
So the way you're describing it, it seems to me that she's obsessed with him for flimsy reasons. He cares less about her than he should, and this imbalance is huge and kind of drags down everything else with it. That seems to be kind of how you're describing it.
Yeah, that's what I would assume from what all the negative feedback is. And, you know, the other girl is dead, technically, right? So even if there was a happy ending with the other girl, it's like he's living with a false illusion of his, right? A ghost.
It's almost like they wrote themselves into a corner in terms of, like, it's not just saying, like, that it should be a happy ending, but it should be, like, a satisfying ending that feels like people, you know, there was like a certain arc to their development, for better or for worse, but it just feels like this one doesn't satisfy neither of those conditions for like a story to actually have a satisfying conclusion or a fulfilling conclusion. it sounds where you're just kind of left hanging because there's a certain loom of like it feels almost incomplete in a sense emotionally. But it's kind of like it's also weird because this game follows the events of The Hungry Lamb, and obviously it's a different cast of characters, but characters from that previous game that people like do show up in this. Like they are even like the Steam description, like you see some familiar returning characters.
So like I said, like the present storyline is about him trying to escape from these soldiers that he perceives as demons in his vision, right? And in the present, he also even meets the, you know, like that girl that the second heroine again. And she basically saved his life by like, you know, by seducing the men, or like the soldiers and men around him, right? But the thing is, there's like no sense of danger once he meets like the main character from the original, because the main character of the original can fight. And then now he's not in any danger of escaping anymore. That's how I see it. It's like, I feel the present storyline is literally like, I really don't care about the present. It's just him constantly being chased by like, you know, soldiers, and he's seeing like corpses everywhere. It's like the present storyline is just not all that interesting, in my opinion.
Are the two storylines about even playtime, like 50-50, or is it mostly present with a few snippets of past? Like, is it even?
It's pretty 50-50. I think the present storyline is not interesting compared to the flashback arcs, in my opinion.
I mean, the way you described it, it sounds like the present storyline isn't interesting, and the past storyline is written kind of flimsily. It seems like neither one, at least in the way you've described it, really shines, unfortunately. Yeah.
It's also kind of like interesting, right? Because this released on the beginning of the month, like April 2nd, and within 8 days of its release, like the developer already came out and posted up a blog post on Steam. It's like the headline was like first week message of gratitude and apology. So they did say, like, you know, they did reach, like, you know, almost 100,000 copies sold, which is, you know, congratulations on that. But, you know, many, many people have voiced their discontent with how this, you know, how this game has been, like, kind of received by the public. And, like, all across the board, like, this seems to have been, like, the reception to it seems to be universally down compared to the first game. And you know, there's also some, like, other technical issues. Like, I've heard, like, that there are, like, some key scenes where, like, that are still, like, missing translations in some languages. There's still a lot of, like, stuff that's, like, yeah, like, it feels like even, like, the English translation isn't as up to par as the first game. And I remember the first game had to, like, you know, had to have some, like, editing passes after it came out to have a stronger script, but it seems like this game has to undergo that similar process, which, you know, it kind of sucks because, like, people bought that previous game on the assumption that, like, hey, they'll release the sequel in a better state, surely. It seems like it's releasing either on par or maybe even worse than the launch version of their previous game in that regard. But in terms of, like, all this, like, people's issues with story, now it almost feels like they're sort of capitulating in a sense to that feedback of that low reception of, like, oh, you didn't like how, you know, our like, you know, the story that we're presenting. So now it feels like they're backtracking within this apology as well, saying, like, oh, within the first month after launch, we'll introduce a short biographical style if route, and they'll provide updates on its development progress. But, you know, this if route is supposedly going to give, you know, a more positive, you know, outcome to people's issues with the game. So it feels like they are already, it feels like they don't have confidence in the story that they already, like, wrote and completed and integrated to the game. They're like, oh man, we need to, like, make something up to, like, make people feel better about this as well, which is also sort of double-edged sword. Yeah.
Like, I've seen apologies for, like, obviously technical issues. That's probably the most common. I've seen apologies for, like, poorly managed financial, like, related to transactions or, you know, currency or DLCs or promos or, you know, something related to, like, you know, money. I don't know if I've ever really seen it for, like, we're sorry how the story was written or came across or how it was framed. Like, I'm not saying it's not allowed. It's just like, I don't know if I've seen a precedent for this.
The one that comes to mind is Mass Effect 3 ending.
Oh, no, that's a good one. Yeah. No, that actually is a decent, you know, obviously not apples to apples, but it is a narrative related thing where they did come out. And I think, you know.
But yeah, introducing a new like what if storyline is almost like weirdly like officially sanctioned fan fiction. Like, oh, you didn't like you didn't like the story we wrote, and rather than just taking the criticism as is, we're gonna just rewrite it, you know, to at your whim.
Yeah, but what do you think about this, Chow, the like this message that they put out?
I think it's fine, but it's obviously, it's like, that's not their original vision, that's just catering to fans. So at the moment, so it's just like, yeah, it's like, as you said, it's a fan fiction. Right?
Yeah, I was really curious how people perceive this, and I unfortunately had to, like, you know, had to rely on machine translation a lot for, because a lot of the comments from this blog post were all in Chinese, and I can't read Chinese.
Like, if you look at the forums, it's like, it's always a post talking about the second heroine, how she deserved better, and how the main character would never give her the attention of the day. Even this picture, the artwork is the second heroine, right?
So like, it just seems like a lot, like, even a lot of people who are responding to this are like, you've kind of, like, it feels like you have no confidence in, like, what you've put out, like, in the way that you've presented this. Which I don't blame them in terms of like their feedback on that. It's like, people wish it could have been better, but I don't think that should be any grounds to be like just totally fold within not even 2 weeks of your launch, you know. So it's kind of a weird one where I had higher hopes for the sequel, because The Hungry Lamb, from what I read so far, was very enjoyable. But seems like they're gonna have to do a lot of work with this sequel, either to get it up to snuff, like, technically and even, like, localization-wise. But also, I don't know where they go from here, because it seems like just from the get-go, people are already pretty down on how it's ended up.
Like, I still recommend playing it, but obviously it's like, if you're comparing The Hungry Lamb is a more tighter, better experience, right? Right. It's probably because, you know, the first game, you know, that's probably like the creator's long time work, so they spent a lot of time refining it and putting something out there. Obviously it's not as lengthy as its sequel, but it's a much more better written sequel. It's like Squid Games, you know, how the first Squid Game took that creator 10 years to come out with the idea. Uh-huh. And the second one,
it was homework to watch Squid Game, apparently. Is
a cash grab sequel that they just kind of, you know, wrote, you know, and just to fulfill, like, you know, marketing demands, right?
Yeah, I think that is that is definitely an interesting danger to, like the dangers of success, almost, where, like you said, like, you let something brew and thought about it for years and years, and you finally got it out to the masses, and it's being, you know, a positive reception all around, but now you've never thought about, like, releasing a follow-up to that, sort of, like, what comes next. Maybe you've written it so, you know, you thought it was a pretty conclusive story, but then, you know, whether it's your publishers or whatever the market demands, like, you feel pressured to be like, okay, well, I guess I have to, you know, make another one because this is what the people want. And that, you, like you said, you don't have much time to, you know, think it through compared to that initial concept, because that was brewing in your head for a long time. Something you were able to flesh out throughout the years.
And there's another thing that disappoint fans too. Like, they do have crowdfunding in the China, and so to feel that crowdfunded this project, so also feels kind of disappointed if this is what they're crowdfunding into, right? So there's also that kind of aspect to it. So, but I still say it's worth checking out. But obviously, if you're expecting this quality of the original, it's like, you probably won't find that here. So, But I would say that there is one bonus chapter, which is all about the characters from the original. They say whoever, you know, loved the original game got a very satisfying conclusion to those characters. I didn't do that route yet, but, you know, the game obviously gave you the choice to, like, unlock them immediately.
That is the one feature of this game that's the wildest, where you can just, like, you can skip around willy-nilly without even having, like, gone there. It's like, you can just, like, get to there if you want to without, you know, if you so choose, you just want to skip shit. Like, that's a funny feature.
I mean, Yeah, it's like reading visual novels. Like, the you know, back then people didn't really play visual novel for the story; they just play it for.
Oh yeah, for the sex scenes. Yeah.
Yeah, so they would just hit the control button to skip everything. So why bother when they could just click it wherever they want?
I mean, that's how it sold back then, you know.
Oh, it's for those players.
Those guys that hit the control marketing button. Expectation.
Yeah, that's my impression of it. But anyways, like once you get around to it, I want to hear your impressions too. Like maybe you could cover both games when you get both games done. Maybe.
Damn, that's already a huge demand right here. Cover right, both.
You gotta play both games. You gotta watch two episodes of Squid Game.
Uh-huh, that's right.
Look. I'm gonna sidetrack here. Every time when there's a Grand Blue Guild Wars coming out, we do a streaming session. In things, so I just watched the entire first season of Severance all in one day. Surely you could do.
While you're doing Guild Wars and Grand.
Yes. You could read an entire visual novel in one day.
That's pretty sick.
Believe I've not watched a single. I hadn't watched a single episode of Severance until I started posting that key card GIF. Like that's what got me to watch Severance. It's the funniest shit ever.
That's really funny though. Like that's how Chow just consumes media now. It's like I just get around to it when Guild Wars starts up. Then when it's not there, I won't even think about it. But when Guild Wars is around, I'm ready. I'm ready to fucking marathon.
Gotta get those that second screen media up or whatever.
Look at that. It's like it's like 1 billion honor grinding watching stream.
Those are very big numbers, Chow. Thanks for sharing.
Anyway. Chow put like a screenshot of his Grand Blue Honors on our staff chat, and he wanted to share the trillions he has. Like, all right, this guy.
It's like surely you can read some visual novels.
All right, but thank you, Chow, for talking about your experience with, the Weeping Swan. I was like, what was the animal?
With Squid Game.
The Weeping Squid. Alrighty.
The Weeping Squid. Oh, that's pretty good.
All right. So another game that I was planning to talk about, we already teed it up, was this last week was the release of Starfield on PlayStation 5. It was also kind of like a package deal of a few updates related to Starfield, including the Free Lanes kind of free update. And the Terran Armada DLC, which was the second like premium DLC for the game. So I jumped into a Discord chat with Adam yesterday. And I was like, all right, I'm ready to do, to play the Starfield DLC. And it's not going to be a major topic, but this way I can speak to it on the podcast tomorrow. And I was telling him, I was like, you know what, I'm going to do my best, take some notes so that I can come onto the podcast and talk about Starfield and try to avoid saying like, any sort of platitude that someone could guess without ever playing it. Like, I didn't want to come on the podcast and say, like, it's more of the same, or if you like Starfield, you'll like the DLC. You know, things like that you could just guess. Like, you don't need me to probably tell you that. I wanted to come up with something, like, poignant, something, like, meaningful. But instead, what I got was, I was playing the game, the DLC, and then after a while, I'm like, wait, I'm stuck. Where am I supposed to go? And then I Googled the playthrough because, of course, within an hour of launch, people have like their 4K, 64 hour, no commentary playthroughs on YouTube. And for whatever reason, one of the main story quests of the DLC just never triggered for me. So like it just I don't have the objective. I can't proceed. I'm basically soft locked. And I'm like, well, it's a Bethesda game. So that means I can just console command like force it, even if it like disables achievements or whatever, like I can just force it on a PC, but people don't know like the quest IDs yet. Like it hasn't been completely sussed out, and I'm sure it will be quickly. But as of last night, I could not find a path through. I even replayed like a section, about an hour section, to see if I could like avoid whatever was causing the soft lock, but I couldn't. So basically I was planning to play the Starfield DLC and like give some impressions, but like I can give some minor impressions. I know Mikhail's also been playing it with like the free update as well, with some of the stuff they just added to the main game or tweaked on the main game. But it's got a mixed reception right now, like on Steam and I'm sure everywhere. Primarily because as soon as I realized that I had this problem, I found like, oh yeah, I just started like spamming links at Adam. Like, oh look, here's two people on Reddit and three people on Steam and one person on Facebook that all can't progress at this point because of something, like it wasn't caught in playtesting or whatever. So I basically had to put Starfield down. And instead, I decided to finish Metroid Dread and play Metroid Prime 4. Like, I don't have anything really to say on those, but I'm like, I guess I'll play these games instead. So, yeah, Mikhail, how has your time with Starfield been in the last week or two?
So it's been pretty great, actually. So just some background, when I played Starfield pre-release in 2023 on Xbox, I was pretty shocked by it because at that point, every Bethesda Game Studios release I had played was buggy dog shit on console until like multiple patches later. Like, let me just tee you up a bit. When I first tried Skyrim, it was on 360. It got bugged. I had a bounty thing bugged in the first 1 hour. Never could fix that, so I dropped it. When I tried it on PS4, something similar happened a few hours later. Dropped it. It did not run well on the laptop I had at that time, so I just never played the Steam copy I had. The Switch version which I played was actually the least buggy of all Skyrim versions which I played. With Fallout 4, I first tried it on Xbox One, complete shit show. Like, it ran like shit, it looked like PUBG, and it bugged out as well. So when I played Starfield, it was surprisingly polished and stuff, but like back then, I kind of got annoyed with the loading screens throughout. It felt like I was playing a game running off a 5400 RPM hard drive, not an SSD. And this is something which I realized like soon after. It was like an engine issue, because that's just how they, like, the creation engine is. And at this point, I was like, I don't know if it's something they can eventually fix or not, but I just decided I'll give it a few months before returning to it. So I essentially like didn't touch Starfield after the launch month on Series X. And when it was like, I got the itch to like replay it or whatever late last year, and then with Microsoft doing all this porting stuff to PlayStation, I thought, you know, may as well wait for this, because then I can like put in time for it for work. So I did that, and like I completely missed out all the vehicles. Like, they added vehicles to the game, like they added one for free, and there's a second one now with the new update as like a free creation. I missed out on the creations because like when I played it pre-release, there were no mods, so that was also new for me.
They added the Mass Effect Mako for surface exploration.
Yeah, and they added the like that was the one which they added last year as the like the only free. They added something called the, I forgot the name, I like literally wrote a guide for it, the new thing which has a rocket launcher attached to it. That's like the, it's a free creation you can claim from Bethesda in the mods thing. So they added a second vehicle with that. So I completely missed vehicles, because I remember when I was playing Starfield, like, you know, the one of the early quests, you have to like go outside Aquila City to this one of the outposts, and you have to like walk quite a bit, and I remember getting really bored by that. But like now you can just drive there, and it's like you get there in like seconds. So that addressed like one of my biggest issues with the game. I'm curious what you like, before I get to that actually. So I've always liked Starfield because I love space games, but I was hoping like in an ideal world, it would have like the No Man's Sky landing and taking off on planets, because I don't want to go through these canned cutscenes. And like even in New Atlantis, like it's so weird. You can enter a store which has an open door, and it'll be like a pretty big room, but then to the left of it, there'll be this tiny like toilet sized room, but it has a loading screen before you get there. That's something which has not been fixed yet, unfortunately. Like, I just think that cannot be fixed based on the engine. But they did address the, like, some of the space travel stuff. Like, the free lanes thing, I thought it would just be lip service, but I'm pretty happy with how they handle that. Like, it makes you actually involved in while exploring. What do you think of that aspect?
So, yeah, to tee it up, Starfield, basically, as it launched and as it existed before this update, like, once you're at the galaxy map or whatever you want to call it, every single star system is its own, I don't know what the word is, fractal, its own fracture. Like, you have to hype grav jump to it, and there's a loading screen. And then when you want to pick a planet and you're in the planet's orbit, you're in a loading screen. And then when you land on the planet, there's a loading screen. And this was a strong criticism of, I almost said Skyrim, of Starfield since it launched. I also agree it's a criticism, but like, not, it didn't really like, anger me too much. So what the free lanes does is that you still can't, there is still no seamless takeoff and landing. That is still a loading screen. But what you can do is they gave you a toggle called cruise mode. And what that is when you're in like an orbit of a planet, you go into cruise mode, then you can just fly directly to other planets in the star system, or if you wanted to other star systems. And then when you're on the way, you'll get these little notifications of, there's an anomaly here over here on the left. There's a ship over here on the right. Do you want to see those? They're little points of interest. And some of them are like, if you're familiar with anything Bethesda's done in the last 10 or 15 years, they're very radiant in terms of like, they're almost like Mad Libs often. It's like, here's a derelict freighter full of space pirates where you can find a weapon, like sort of thing, where it's all just kind of procedurally generated with a few bespoke ones thrown in. Like there's a cheeky one where you find like an old lady on a ship by herself and she offers you like a dubious dinner with her and you can turn it down. Or there's one where there's like a pirate holding a crew hostage and he does like the Joker sort of thing where he's like, you know, you gotta do this little trial of mine. Otherwise I'm going to take I'm going to kill the hostages. And for me, to kind of get to the crux of my thesis here, is one way that Starfield is designed that I don't gel with is like, if I play a Fallout game or a Elder Scrolls game and I see an icon on the map, I personally, this is just personal preference, I'm encouraged to go there to visit, to see what it is, whether it's a cave or a fortress or a dungeon or a city, because I know that someone built it, like something's there. It might have quests, it might have gear, it might have enemies. But when you see a point of interest in Starfield, some of them are bespoke, but many of them are kind of like this procedurally semi-generated. And what I mean by that is like they have like certain like flavors that they can be. Now, the update did change how those are like doled out like on the back end, but the crux of it hasn't changed. So for me, when I'm playing a game like Starfield and I see like a point of interest pop up on a surface of a map, or if I'm cruising in a ship, like I might be interested in seeing it, but I'm just like, oh, it's just going to be another derelict freighter, or it's just going to be another abandoned mining base that I could enter if I want. And some of them do have interesting stories, but I just don't think the randomness of it really gels to me. But I also am kind of glad, in like a more high level sense, that Starfield did try something different. Like, I'm not saying I like the way Skyrim did it better, therefore Starfield should have been like Skyrim. Like, no, I'm glad that it tried something different with how it handles its points of interest, but I like it less. That's kind of where I end up on there. Like, you tried something different, but I don't prefer it. Go ahead, Mikhail.
Yeah, so like, you know how some quests, like that one thing you get early on where you get this random memo you pick up and it leads to that Mantis quest line, which is like, I'm pretty sure everyone loves that because it, mm-hmm. Did you do that?
Yeah. I have like so, that ship and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, so like that, so that's something which surprised me back then. And like when it happened now, when I was replaying it, it like my memories came back to me because like 2 years ago, I was like, oh, I completely forgot. This was so cool because once you get that ship and like you just start exploring, you like when people scan you and stuff, they're like, oh, it's the Mantis. Like, sorry, you can go. Do you need me to give you my clothes or something? Like all, I think Starfield would have like been a lot better if they had more of these types of things, but I did appreciate having them, and that's exactly why I ended up like with my headline for the article, which I just said Starfield is the best it's ever been, but it's still Starfield. Like, that wasn't like clickbaiting or anything. Like, whatever they did, it's still Starfield. They didn't change it. Like, I feel like there's this misconception that when people look at stuff like Cyberpunk and like they're like, oh, you know, like we need a Cyberpunk 2.0 thing. Like, Cyberpunk when it launched and Cyberpunk now, they fixed a lot of the bugs, but it's still the same game. They didn't like dramatically change the game except for like skills and stuff. I'd say it's still the same thing, so you can't really do anything with what Starfield is right now. That's why, like, I think that's why they tried to set expectations by saying don't call it 2.0, because they're not like changing how the game works or anything. They're just like improving and like trying to add to make it a better experience for people who already liked it. But I will say that it's funny how this worked out. This was like the first big game I played on the PS5 Pro, like for work. And it is like a massive upgrade over the Xbox version I played last year and the base PS5 version. Like, even when you play in the performance mode, it looks better than the quality mode on the base console. So like, I was enjoying that. But more than anything, like, the controller support is like the best thing ever, because the other criticism I had of Starfield besides the loading screens were like you had to like go in and out and waste so much time like backing in and out of menus.
The menuing is bad.
Yeah.
It still is.
So like I assume if you're playing on keyboard and mouse, you can just like have stuff mapped to the numpad or like, you know, the number keys where you can just like press 4 and it'll open whatever. But on the PS5 controller, they basically mapped stuff by default to the trackpad. So you can save time by like swiping to the right and opening your skill tree, swiping down and opening your weapon, something like that. Like I forgot the exact binding, but swiping up opens something, swiping left opens something directly. So you don't have to like go into the menu, press something else. It saves you like 3-4 clicks every single time. And they also did some other cool stuff with like besides doing haptics and adaptive triggers for like, you know, mining and shooting. They even made it so that the light bar like is represented, like it represents your health, so it changes color based on your health, and all radio comms and everything happens through the controller speakers. You can disable that, but it's a bit surprising that they went all in on this, and like I was enjoying that. And when I played a few hours of it on the PS5 version, and I re-downloaded on Xbox to compare, and I started playing, I was like, wait, I immediately missed the controller, like being able to swipe up, because suddenly when I wanted to go into like inventory or go here, I had to like press this, move the D-pad down and go here. So that was like probably the biggest upgrade besides just like the visuals being better and stuff. So yeah, like that. I don't know how it is with keyboard and mouse, but I very much appreciate the controller stuff they did.
Yeah, I almost always play first person RPGs with a keyboard and mouse, but for Starfield it was a big learning curve. There's a lot of menuing that is unintuitive. I have it down now, but only because I've played it a lot. But yeah, like my final thought is basically like there are certain things of Starfield and Bethesda games in general that I do find like clever or well done, or like this little part is actually really good, but the package never lives up. Like I already talked about how the fact that I literally couldn't play the DLC because I'm softlocked. Like that should be a huge mark against it. And not only that, but I didn't even bring up like Adam was watching me play. For whatever reason, there was one airlock that whenever I opened it, my game would crash. And whenever I have like PC issues like that, I'm like, oh no, did I like configure something, or is my motherboard not set up right? Is it my fault? But it was like consistently whenever that airlock opened, I would crash. So I had to like I made it like a low resolution, put it in a small window, and then like opened the airlock and held my breath, and then it got through. I'm like, all right, this is a very silly way to have to play a game to you know, wrestle it to be on my terms. So is it still Starfield? I guess the answer on my end is also yes. Some of the things that I just very quickly that I do think are like just little clever things that these games do that I still enjoy when I do see them in Bethesda games is like I'm playing on a character that has done like most of all the other side quests, all the other factions. And when I go to respond to the initial like distress call, I say like I'm with the UC Vanguard, don't worry, because I've like finished that quest and I'm a captain. Like, oh, finally someone's here to save us. And then later in the quest I had the option to say like us Free Star Rangers have to stick together. And then the person was like, both the Vanguard and the Free Star Rangers, you sure get around. Like the fact that they just like have a like just dialogue factored in based on other things that you've done, which sounds like a pretty low bar to hit, but they do it pretty frequently in these games, so I do appreciate whenever I see that. Also, there was a new quest that they added. I think it's part of the Free Lanes update and not for the DLC specifically, but it's related to the new outpost that you can go to, the Anchor Point, where basically you end up having to you learn about a star system that had like an outpost on it that one person murdered all the rest at the outpost, and then he fled, and you have to like track him down. And then when you track him down, you find that he is like quote unquote a changed man. He's like a father figure to many people. He's like kind of brought a civilization back from the brink, and he's like done a lot of good. And there's some interesting questions there. It's not the most profound thing in the world, but it's a little bit of wrestling, like, okay, what sort of comeuppance does this person deserve? Or, you know, has he exonerated himself? And you can ask him, like, are you a changed person? And he's like, I don't know. Like, what do you mean by that? I was a murderer then and I'm a murderer now. That's never going to change, sort of thing. So there are nuggets of good, interesting, and I think, you know, worth discussing points in Starfield. But underneath everything else that holds it back, and that hasn't changed, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think there's one more thing which I forgot to mention before. It's that they added those customizable difficulty sliders now instead of just letting you pick like five options or whatever. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a welcome addition because I missed that as well because I hadn't played it since launch month. So you can make it like a whole survival game by completely turning up all the damage and like all the survival aspects and mechanics. But they also added the some sliders related to the Terran Armada because they can like attack you or attack stuff, right? That's the whole like one of the mechanics they added. So they added a toggle for how often that can happen, which is interesting. And they also added some legendary, like the legendary rarity related appearance rates, which you can also toggle now. And all of this affects your experience. So you can essentially tweak how much or how little experience you get in Starfield as well, based on your difficulty, which is something I like seeing. Like, they didn't do what Remedy does in their games, because when I was like replaying Alan Wake 2 last week, they just added like God mode, like as options, like infinite ammo, infinite health and stuff like that. But over here you get to like, you have granular control over that, so that was nice. And the creations, like it wasn't live when I was playing it on PS5, except for like a few went live before embargo, but since launch day I can confirm that the creations are the same on PS5 and Xbox, so there's no like restriction based on what I could tell. Like, even though there's like the unofficial bug fix mod and stuff like that, there's like this team which has been working on those for like every Bethesda game since like Oblivion, and they did one for Starfield also. That's also available. Then there's like mods for like infinite resources, infinite like weight limits, and Bethesda has their own mods like for like Doom Slayer stuff. And also, I, as far as I could tell, all the mods which I had installed on Xbox when I was testing were also there on PS5. The only thing is some mods are paid, obviously, and the Trackers Alliance bounty series, which they made a big deal about, pretty interesting. That costs 700 creation points or whatever they call it. And if you have the premium edition, you get 1,000 premium points or creation points for free with that. So you can start this quest line for free without buying it, but you have to like pay 700 for the rest. So I'd recommend like doing the opening, because you get like easy money from this bounty series. You can access it as soon as you get to Aquila City, and then you can like take a call whether you want the rest. But I think like I'm not deleting the game. I'm gonna like just get into it and relax, because I'm still enjoying it despite the loading screens. I'll probably like, hopefully in a month or two, I'll have like finished Shattered Space at least, because I know that people don't really care much for that, but I want to play that before I do Terran Armada. So we'll see how that goes.
I'm glad you looked at the creation stuff, because it just doesn't interest me. So I've like never even looked at its direction. So I'll take a look at the official stuff though. But I'm one of the rare people who rarely mods my Bethesda games. I just kind of play the package experience and enjoy it for what it is. But, yeah. So yeah, that's Starfield, Terran Armada. So couldn't give you any more details because it wouldn't let me play it. All right. So the third game that we have listed here, I don't know if Adam wrote this or if Josh wrote this, but it ties to another news kind of headline here. One that's kind of been repeated last couple weeks. It's about Crimson Desert. So Mikhail wrote it. So, okay. I didn't expect that. So Mikhail, how come you... How do I say this? So there was a Crimson Desert dev update where they talked about, you know, their plans for the games, and they've been updating this game frequently is an understatement ever since its launch. We've already kind of had that as a talking point on other episodes of the podcast. And they talked about how they're, you know, talking about new content, difficulty options, you know, a boss rush mode potentially, or things like that. Not boss rush, but boss rematches. They've already changed how so many things work in that game. So did you have a specific topic on that you wanted to touch on, Mikhail?
Yeah. So, I've been like following what Josh and Scott, who wrote a review in progress for us, and Josh was doing a lot of guide work. So they've been talking about how the game changed quite a bit pre-release leading into launch day, and then like a few days after launch. And since then, it's been like this running joke essentially between Josh and me that anytime they announce a big update, we just look at it and they've changed so much, and like we just post about it in our staff chat. And it started getting to a point where like it was just expected from me that, oh, they're going to announce 1 million more sales and they're going to announce some big changes. But what they've announced in the last 2-3 days and what they've patched out already, like, I just felt like this is something which I talked to Josh about, like, just randomly, that, you know, it doesn't make sense playing AAA games day one. Like, you always get a better experience when you wait. But in this case, like, I just wanted to just discuss that has any game changed this much so soon after launch in recent memory? That was basically the crux of the thing.
Not at this scope, really. Not that I can think of it, like within, like, when did this game release? It feels like less than a month still.
It's like 19th, so like 3 weeks.
Yeah, and this is like, I mean, this game, Crimson Desert, changed a little bit, even during pre-release with the, like, you know, when, before it even launched, you know, it got like a big patch update of like, adding a lot of like, inventory slots, like starting inventory slots, I think about like from 20 to 50. And that's something that like, people don't really know of until, because they didn't see like the initial state of this game before it released. And then, you know, as time went on, even like the launch version of the game, they added a lot more fast traveling points, even to like some key spots. And, you know, it's been well documented when this game came out. So this game has just been being transformed, you know, for better and for worse, because, you know, the speed of these updates and these additions have broken some stuff, you know, technical stuff here and there, which they had to like hot fix, because a game of this scope and size and getting out these updates as frequently as it does, it kind of makes you think like, hey, they're probably not quality checking all of this at the speed that they're doing this. And it makes you think about like, hey, are these developers like, are they seeing their family still with just the amount of like work that they're putting in to get these updates out so fast? It's just like, hey man, what's going on? So like, they released a dev update letter on April 9, for example, that like you know, we're already detailing, hey, in the future we're going to add like, you know, boss rematches, reblockading, difficulty settings, new skills for, you know, the other playable characters, hiding back weapons and stuff. Like, it's like, okay, like, they're, like, it makes you think like, hey, they're gonna, this is stuff that they're just stating right now for future updates. And you think like, okay, maybe their next update like is within like, you know, probably soonest is like in a week. Maybe they're gonna space these out more, because these are features that are like, are cool to have, but like maybe not essential. And then 2 days after that dev update that came out on April 11, it's like, hey, patch notes, new version. Here's all the stuff that they put out, that they, a lot of the stuff that they detailed in that dev letter came out, you know, 2 days after. It's like, okay, why did he even have a dev update letter for this when you're just gonna release this patch like 2 days after? Like, what are, like, this is like, obviously a lot of it is like welcome for people who are playing this game, of course, for, you know, like adding new features, fixes, stuff like that, like a lot of requested features like hiding the back weapons, and then being able to like fast travel even while you're mounted or falling or something, like even when you're stuck in an animation already or like in a certain state, like you can just fast travel right away, you don't have to worry about it. But then like, and then also stuff like adding a new ability, focused aerial roll, which is basically officializing what was previously a glitch. Basically, when you, there was an ability people found in the game beforehand where they could glide for a long amount of time if they went into the focus state while gliding, like the stamina consumption on gliding was severely reduced, so they could glide for extended amounts of time. They added this technique, which was like not intentional. First they patched it out or nerfed it, then they actually added it like as its own skill now. You know, you do have some prerequisites, but hey, as long as you can have this, like the spirit gauge and consumption for it, you can actually like do this technique, which is like basically air dashing now in the game, which is like, it's really cool that they did that. But it's just like, man, like, and there's so much more that, like, you know, I could like get into, but it's just like this, the amount of like things that they're adding to this game not even a month after its release, and it's like at a breakback like like speed pace, like, you know, it's like it's crazy just like how fast and how much that they're doing. And also one of the big things that they added with this also is they finally added official support for Intel Arc GPUs with this patch update too. And then they mentioned that, you know, they're gonna add support for more Intel GPUs over time as they improve it little by little. They added, you know, XeSS support with this update as well for those Intel GPUs. Well, if you remember on launch day, they had an FAQ, you know, for people who were trying to run this game at launch day, like, hey, I can't get this thing to run on my Intel GPU. You know, what do you have any, what's your answer to that? And they said, oh, just refund the game. You know, we don't support it right now. You know, it's like, okay, that's weird that you only decided to convey this to us on launch day and not beforehand. And there's a whole debacle of, like, even Intel saying, hey, we reached out to them throughout, you know, the years of this game in development of, like, to support our GPUs and even, like, you know, ship them our products to, you know, help and ask them, you know, if you need help. We're here for support on that. And, you know, it wasn't until just less than, you know, within 3 weeks after its release, finally, it's like, okay. Since it's it feels like it's like reactionary updates in terms of like they're seeing feedback from a lot of their player base, from Digital Foundry, from many other sources, and it just feels like they're now getting up to speed of like the things that people wanted pre-release are now being rapidly added post-launch. And I just feel like it's, once again, it's much appreciated in terms of like, hey, if you're playing this, it continues to get better. But at the same time, I think about, like, is this sustainable for the people that are, like, working on it? Hopefully they're doing okay. You know, I am pro, you know, better labor conditions, even if that means that people might have to wait a little longer. But, like, you know, like I said, I don't work for them. I don't know what conditions that, like, you know, the developers are under. Hopefully they're doing all right, because we also heard, you know, that a lot of the development team has moved on to work on their next project, Dokkaebi. And hopefully whatever crew that they have still working on this game are, you know, doing well. You know, it's just like, it's kind of like a crazy thing.
A little
thing.
More high level than that. Like, I have not played Crimson Desert, though I have seen, like Mikhail said, like all of the posts about the updates that have been frequent ever since its release. But just on a more general level, the fact that you mentioned that a lot of these updates do seem to be reactionary to feedback, and I do think like reacting to feedback is important, but there's also like, what was your vision for the game in the first place? Like, it's not a crowdsourced, like, we're just going to do the thing that most people want and have them have the Steam forums or Reddit or whatever make our decisions for us. Like, what was your vision for the game? Like, how did you want this mechanic to work? Not just, oh, all the critics said this was bad, so we changed it. Of course, on a case-by-case basis, certain things can be good decisions to change or tweak, but I feel like there's, like, scales to this or levels to this, where eventually they're just going to be like, we're going to try to please as many people as possible by doing most things that people critique about until people no longer critique it, and then the game will be done. Just like, I don't know if that's, like you said, sustainable. Or if the game that results from that will ultimately be interesting or as.
Yeah, I hear you. Definitely. Like, it feels like that's a good point to bring up, because, like, for people who were, there's a certain allure to this game before all these patches where some part of it was like survival, some of it was like, hey, you're traveling the world through a mount on foot, like scaling, like, you know, places with like this robust climbing system and so forth. And like, you basically, you know, for better or for worse, this was like a game you explored that was largely grounded. And through, you know, many, many updates, you know, at this point in time, like, it just feels like, hey, just go spec into these things and you can basically infinitely air dash across the world now. And they're just like, what are we doing? You know, like, sure, it's cool to some extent, but you do lose that sense of immersion, like grounded immersion that like they largely marketed this game on for many months beforehand, if not years. And now we're like, okay, well, what is this game?
So
Weird. Yeah.
Yeah, I assume this won't be the last time we're going to talk about Crimson Desert, because it just seems like it's going to be kind of within the lexicon for at least the next little bit.
Yeah,
probably going to see like 1 million sales every week or so, and like one major update every week or so as well.
Yeah, like I'm just very curious to see what is the state of this game. Like, I would have normally said this, like the statement, I wonder what the state of this game is going to be in a year, but now I'm just like, I wonder what the state of this game is going to be like within 6 months, because it's continually
like 2 months.
You know, it's a very interesting like case study of like, hey, this is a developer that like has gone on the opposite side of the spectrum of like, there's like the spectrum of like developers listening to feedback, and like there's definitely some case, like, you know, a lot of cases of like of one end of that spectrum where like the developer has like kind of shut out feedback, like public feedback. It's like kind of doing their own thing, but then it feels like that this is the other side of that spectrum where the developers have like totally capitulated to like public demands and feedback, and like just giving everything people want, maybe for better or for worse.
And even if that's not 100% true, it's how it comes across. Like, that's like how I'm perceiving it. So
yeah, for sure.
Adam, I'll let you take kind of the next topic. Just because I mentioned at the top that we got a lot of articles up from basically PAX East impressions. PAX East was not last weekend, but 2 weekends ago. And Kennedy, who has covered and like submitted features from PAX East for us on the site before, has put up a few features. And then Jess Reyes, who has been on this podcast in the past and has contributed to the site, also did a feature from a PAX East opportunity. So Adam, I know that you didn't write these, but you edited these. So I'm not sure if you had like an order, or like you knew one of these was, you know, something that really should be touched on first, or just what your impression was getting these articles up on the site for Kennedy and for Jess.
Yeah, so we don't have one of our regular contributors to RPG Site or this podcast. We don't really have someone that regularly makes it out to PAX East, you know, year after year. So we actually have a freelancer who lives like local to the area, who's basically like, hey, you know, I'm here anyway, so I'm going to check out what's here, and if you guys want me to cover anything, I can do that. And that's Kennedy. And they've written various previews for us in the past. And so there are 4 previews from PAX on the site, 3 from Kennedy and 1 from Jess. Jess is a former writer for us. So the 3 previews, I guess I'll start with the two of the previews that Kennedy did were from NIS America. So NAS America was at PAX East. They had a handful of games there. Like, for example, they had Etrange Overlord, which is already out, but, you know, might as well demo it still. But didn't write a preview for that one since we already have a review. But 2 of the upcoming NIS games that were available to play at PAX East for attendees, one of them was Brigandine Abyss, which is a tactical RPG tactical strategy game from HappyNet and AdGlobe. Published by NIS America. And then the other game was Disgaea Mayhem, which is an actual like Neat Panichi software game, which in Japan, we've talked about this before, is not, I think we talked about this, it's actually given a different title. It's not technically a Disgaea game, but it's got like Disgaea crossover content, but it's got like the same art style and whatnot and printies, and, you know, so when for the localization, they're just calling it a Disgaea game, even though it is anything but in terms of its style. So basically, the gist of these 2 previews, I'll be brief. Disgaea Mayhem, Kennedy has some familiarity with the series. He's just like, all right, Disgaea is a tactical game or a tactical series, strategy RPG, grids, big numbers, things like that. This game is not that. This game is more like a Muzo Warriors type game. Big numbers are still there, but, you know, you're just mowing down hordes and hordes of enemies in like a Disgaea coat of paint. And his preview basically, it doesn't go much more in depth than that. It's just like, that's what it is on the tin. It's a Muzo Warriors type game in a Disgaea coat, which he said, like, it's hard to make sense of this, but maybe that's why it's kind of interesting. It's just kind of its own weird little goofy thing. It's that. Not sure if there's a whole lot more to say about it.
I like Muzo games. Maybe it's cool.
Yeah, with the Disgaea, you know, flavor and wackiness, I guess. The other game, and I've actually heard multiple people come away from Brigandine with this kind of same sort of idea, First of all, I thought this was kind of interesting because Kennedy playing Brigadoon Abyss, they didn't actually know it was a series. Like, this is really the third game in the series. They thought it was just like a brand new IP until they started like looking it up to like write about it and like, wait a minute, what is Brigadoon: The Legend of Runerzia? What is Brigadoon: The Legend of Forsenna? Which are basically the first two games in the series. So this is the third one. To be clear, the first game in the series had a couple different versions. Some have slightly different titles, but Kennedy basically said, like, this game got the best of me, kicked my butt, but it actually makes me more interested to play it, because, you know, almost for revenge or whatever to get back at it, but it was challenging, it was tough. And, like, the demo asked for a lot from you that they played at PAX East. And I feel like I've seen other people come away with the same sort of, like, impressions. And a friend of mine, Lucas White, also played the demo. And he said, yeah, that demo's whole vibe is good luck, idiot, in terms of how tough and challenging it is.
I hope they do make this a public demo, because I'm interested to play it because of that.
Yeah. And I'm interested, too, because I actually didn't realize. I knew it was HappyNet did the previous game, but it's also being developed by AdGlobe, which worked on, like, Ender Lilies and Redemption Reapers, and it's got some of the, you know, key staff behind some of those games, at least contributing to some degree. So I'm interested. Do I have time to check out Runerzia? Cal played that, right?
I like the original a lot.
The original Brigadoon?
Not original PS1, but there was a second one, the Legend of
Runerzia.
Runerzia.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I played it. I even wrote the review of it.
Right. So I remember. Yeah, so I'm actually pretty interested in this one.
Yeah, I think the only thing that the reason I wouldn't want to like review like this one is just mostly because I know what I would be getting into. It'll be a huge time sink. That's like one of the things.
Yeah, better or for worse, that's always the danger of like signing up for an RPG review. It's like if you know it's gonna be a lengthy thing, it's like, oh fuck, I have to meet a deadline.
Yeah, that was like the most hype thing when I saw that in like the state of play for me, like that one. Yeah. Recent one. It's like, everyone's like, obviously the chat would be like, oh, lame anime ass shit or something like that. It's like, no, this shit is hype.
So yeah, I definitely have friends that's like, that was definitely the highlight for them, because they are Brigadoon fans, like PS1 Brigadoon fans, and they also love Legend of Runerzia. They're like, oh fuck, I never thought that we'd get another Brigadoon game, because it's one of those series that's like very, very, very niche, but has a very loyal following. Despite that nicheness, and
it is sort of weird that it is like a series now, because it was just it was just one PS1 game, and then, you know, whatever, 20 years later, it was like, here's a follow-up. It's like, okay, it's a PS1 game with a follow-up, you know, sure, which I guess technically makes it a series. And like, now we're already at like the not already, but now we're at the third game in the now series of this Brigadoon. So
I mean, it's cool, but it also makes you think behind this, like, how did this continue to get a follow, because it feels like that game was like very cool, but it didn't seem to like sell, like perform well, you know. Yeah. Despite, you know, like quality aside, which like it's great that it was a great game, but it just doesn't seem like it has like the spotlight on it for whatever reason. It just, I don't know.
Yeah,
like,
and
hopefully Abyss like breaches that and like gets, you know, performs better.
Yeah, and I remember Brigadoon: The Legend of Runerzia, which again is the second game, also had like a weird release cadence, because it was a Switch exclusive to start, I think, and then PS4, and then Steam, like had this weird, you know, staggered platform release. And this new one, being an IIS America kind of published game, I think is, actually don't remember the platforms at the top of my head, but it's basically going to be simultaneous across them. Let me look it up here real quick. PC, PS5, Xbox, and Switch. So yeah,
I'm looking at Legend of Runerzia's Steam like page now, and like their news section is really weird, because they recently put up a new Steam post like several days ago on April 9th saying, we confirmed the following issues under certain PC environment, which is like the game may get stuck during startup, and the game may get stuck during an autosave. It's like, okay, those are pretty big issues. I don't know exactly what PC environments, hopefully niche PC environments, those are under, because beforehand, before that news post, Like, the last one was, like, back in 2022, and it's just like, vote for us during the Steam Awards, and trading cards are available now.
Yeah, that's when it came out 4 years ago, so.
Yeah. So it's like,
Yeah, why was there an update 2 days ago? Huh.
Wild. Very wild.
I think I own this, but I haven't played it, and now I feel like I should. Okay, anyways, more previews.
And our infinite free time.
Yeah, that we all have. The other preview that Kennedy put up was for Anemo, which Anemo is, I'm sorry, let me look up who the developer is.
Paw Print Studio,
yeah. But yeah, it's a free-to-play creature collector game with a very, like, cute, fuzzy, colorful art style. Kennedy's preview basically kind of says, like, you know, obviously a lot of creature games, you know, are trying to, like, make themselves distinct from Pokemon or Digimon or whatever, and, like, this game kind of has a good art style, has a good color palette, it has an interesting mechanic where you, like, fuse with your monster, which I know it's not the first monster catcher to let you do that. And the demo or the preview is basically saying, yeah, it was a promising demo, but also this game is free to play, and I have no idea what that monetization is going to look like, which is kind of like a big, you know, consideration. Like, how is this going to look when you're actually, like, playing it and trying, you know, how does the money work? We don't know.
Yeah.
So, because it's a free-to-play game. So that's kind of that one. You know, kind of like the demo was good, but a lot of uncertainties on the what the full release will look like. That's Anemo. That's A-N-I-I-M-O. The fourth preview that we have from PAX East, which is from Jess Reyes, is for Grave Seasons, which I've actually seen quite a bit of excitement for. So it's a farming, like, you know, game, farming RPG, farming simulation game, which have been, of course, very popular. This one's kind of gimmick, and what makes it unique and stand out and why people are excited for it is that it's a mix between a farming sim and a murder mystery. So it's got all the things that you'd want from a farming sim, like farming and bachelors and bachelorettes and dating. And it's got, you know, things you like from a murder mystery game in terms of, like, mystique and interest in whodunit.
For some reason, I thought you were going to say, like, it's got stuff from murder mystery games, such as murder or something like that.
Well, joke I was going to make was you could even date the murderer if you want, which people are excited for. Yes.
Okay.
And there's like multiple endings and paths the way that we game then go, depending on, like, how you approach it. So yeah, mix between murder mystery and farming sim, and you can, like, break and enter, like, the grocery store or the houses, and yeah, it's definitely a unique twist on the genre, which I think the genre kind of needed, because there's so many of these, like, farming cozy games, and this one's, like, cozy but also murder mystery. So that's that.
Is that the next evolution of these games where you can date the criminal?
Yes.
So you can have a wave of that now.
I guess the idea is trying to capitalize on the "I can fix them" mindset.
That's true. There is potential there.
But yeah, I've seen a lot of excitement for that. That one is coming. That game is coming out in August.
Well, thank you, Adam, for playing editor on all the four of those features. So if you go to rpgsite.net and you hit on articles, you'll see all four of those pretty close to the top.
We don't have it listed here or whatever, but I did share, like, an update on one of the GDC appointments that Adam did for Mongil Star Dive, and I guess they had, like, some dev stream some time ago, but it was a day ago or so. But I was reading a summary on, like, you know, what they showed at that dev stream, you know, basically outlining, hey, the game's coming out in a few days, here's, like, what people can expect in this game. And one of the points of contention with this game that people are wondering is, like, the amount of male characters. So how many male characters will this game have, like, moving forward? And the way that this person summarized it is, 4 out of the 19 characters are going to be male. It's like, okay. And then in the future, like, new male characters are only going to be added if they're strictly necessary for the narrative. And I fucking lost it. Like, I laughed so hard during that, like that specific point of, like, the developers drove home the fact that, like, there won't be any male characters going to be added unless the narrative calls for it, but that's it. Don't worry. It's like, what are we doing here?
I feel there's like a few
lovely
metaphors you could make with that statement.
So like, obviously, these sorts of like gacha games kind of, they dive into, you know, the waifu type, you know, aesthetic and whatnot. And
do girls sell?
But yeah. I know women who play these games and they get like attached to the men that they show and that they reveal and release for these games too. It's like, I know there is an audience for that. So
yeah, they're like, I feel like that's like been, it's always like,
and men can appreciate good looking men.
It's like an ongoing trend of like, hey, these games like first like have a vision of like they first launch and they have like at least some male characters then there, but like, you know, whether it's skewed to like how much, you know, female characters are there. Obviously, a large audience is like, you know, we're gonna pull for characters that we find appealing and like appeal to us and we find attractive, obviously, but there's a certain point where whether it's like Brown Dust to Snowbreak, which is, you know, Snowbreak has its own can of worms that I won't get into, but and even like stuff like Zenless Zone Zero to some extent, like eventually as these games move on, they kind of capitulate like, hey, we're gonna add less and less males, like, you know, over time. And just like in Brown Dust 2's case, like they just kind of at first, like when they first launched, like they at least had like a male, like, you know, participating in the main story and like was like on the cover of that game. And at some point in development, they're just like, fuck this, we're only gonna add, you know, females moving forward. And even Zenless Zone Zero over time, it feels like it's skewed largely to like adding more females over time. It's kind of, you know, it feels like you've pulled the rug out from under like your initial audience of like, hey, there are definitely, as Adam said, you know, there are definitely some a female audience that do like the style of this game and like the male characters that were there at launch. And then like over time, the, you know, they've kind of just capitulated to like, hey, you know, we're not making enough money by, you know, adding these male characters, so we're just going to shift our pipeline to only females. You know, it's kind of, I feel like I'm more,
it's like shrinking the audience, but trying to target the whales.
Yeah, I'm more forgiving if that's like the initial original plan, and like this is the plan originally, and there's no surprise when that's the, you know, that's always been the original plan. But for when you shift that pipeline from one thing to another, that's like, for me, that just like, that kind of sucks for people who are there for one thing and you just totally, you know, submitted to another plan, because that's what makes you money, and I get it. I feel like if that's the original plan beforehand, like, you know, Star Savior, it's like, they were very clear beforehand that like, it's going to be an all-female cast besides your main character. It's like, okay, sure. Like, that's your vision for the game. That's fine, because that's kind of like your original plan. But when it becomes like something that like Brown Dust 2, where it's like if you're just giving up, like, okay, this is, you know, yes, sure.
I think that covers us for articles, as well as like what we've been playing and like in terms of headlines, what we really had for big headlines. Well, I guess there's some big headlines here. We'll go into the two streaming events that we had. We'll start with Level 5's, their craftsmanship stream, and then we'll go into Triple I after that, and then we'll wrap up from there. So Level 5 Vision, you know, as of the last couple of years, this has become a fairly regular event, and Level 5, remember like 2 years ago, or hearing anything from Level 5 was, you know, we'd hear about games like Deca Police or Fantasy Life, and we'd be like, you know, when are we going to see these? And then all of a sudden last year was kind of like a return to form for them, and it seems like they're keeping that momentum going into this year with I don't know, it feels like Level 5 is back, I guess, is what I'm beating around the bush and saying. So we had a Level 5 Vision 2026 stream. The first thing that I have listed here is the announcement of a new title. This is Snack World Reloaded. It is a follow-up to 2020's Snack World the Dungeon Crawl. My first initial impression of this when I was watching these trailers to speak to it on this podcast is that it feels like a very like kind of generic trailer, but it has like a licensed anime styled like backing vocal theme throughout the whole trailer as part of the announcement, that elevates it a little bit. So it's like, hell yeah. So Snack World is coming to Nintendo Switch 2, PlayStation 5, and PC at some point.
Yeah, so
this is a remake, actually, of the of Snack World, the Dungeon Crawl Gold, which was itself like an enhanced port. Yeah, it was an enhanced port. That was an Snack World, the Dungeon Crawl Gold was an enhanced like Switch port of the 3DS game, which was like this cross-media thing, which they did in Japan. And Snack World, the Dungeon Crawl Gold, was released and marketed by Nintendo outside, because like during the like Switch and 3DS era, Nintendo used to handle a lot of their publishing and distribution. So like even that Lady Layton Catriel and whatever the hell the name was, I forgot the name, that was also handled by Nintendo. So Snack World was this very weird thing, because I remember I was like, whatever, I've said this like tons of times, I was obsessed with Fantasy Life on 3DS. So when there's like a new level 5 game after a game I really liked, I was excited to play it. But this was during that transition period where there was like always uncertainty on whether something Level 5 did was going to release in English. And then when it releases, was it going to release in North America? Because the 3DS was region locked, right? You had like Phoenix Wright versus Layton, which was like released later in North America compared to Europe. So stuff like this just never made it over. And when it came to Switch, finally, I bought it. And it was pretty generic and whatever, like, it didn't feel like it was doing much for me. It felt like I was playing a B-team version of Fantasy Life, just the quest without the story stuff or whatever, and I dropped it in a few hours. But I'm up for this, like, after two Level 5 games that I really enjoyed, and one which I'm, like, nearly done with, like, the final update stuff, which they've been doing with Inazuma, which we'll get to in a bit. But yeah, like, I'm a bit concerned about the Snack World Reloaded thing, because, like, I might be assuming too much, but based on the trailer, it looks like they're doing it in Unreal Engine 5, just based on the effects. And I believe, like, I'll have to reinstall the game to check, but I believe Snack World, the Dungeon Crawl Gold, was a Unity game. So I don't know if they're, like, actually rebuilding the whole thing in Unreal 5, because I believe Fantasy Life I is Unreal 5, so maybe that's their new tech which they're using. But I'm a bit concerned about that. But yeah, it is coming to, like, current platforms only. The one omission which I've seen, like, some people joke about and all, is that none of the new announcements were for Xbox. So, like, I guess after Fantasy Life I and Inazuma 11, which were, like, the Xbox account has been posting about it, like, under their ID at Xbox banner, which I find quite funny, because I guess Level 5 is independent, but, like, ID at Xbox is supposed to be for, like, small indie games. So that I always laugh when I see those trailers get uploaded there. But yeah, none of the announcements which we're going to talk about were for Xbox. It was only for, like, PlayStation, PC, and Switch. So yeah, that's essentially Snack World, the Dungeon Crawl. And Josh, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I'm very 50-50 on this, like the Level 5 being back remark, because I do agree that, like, they have some interesting upcoming games, and then obviously some games that are still, like, all stuck in development hell. Like, the Snack World Reloaded thing is, like, I've heard the name, but I never played the game. It looks interesting. Like, I think it feels like it's using a lot of, like, Fantasy Life I assets, which is, I'm always like, hey, you know, if you've made assets and you can use it for other games in your pipeline, like, definitely do so. Like, if it makes development easier on its developers and more efficient in that regard. Because, like, there's definitely some aspects of that trailer, it's like, man, this looks kind of like a lot like Fantasy Life I, but more combat focused. Like, I don't know much about Snack World in that regard, but people say it's like almost a Diablo-esque action RPG, and for better or for worse, people are, like, kind of divided on whether it's good or not. But it seems
do you play Final Fantasy Explorers?
A little bit.
I'd say, like, when I played Final Fantasy Explorers, everyone told me that's the best 7/10 game you can play on 3DS. I think Snack World would be the best 6/10 game you can play on 3DS, and it didn't improve much on Switch. It's very much I'd say, like, I might be a bit too, like, criticizing it too much, but it's definitely one of the handheld RPGs, brackets, derogatory, not complimentary type games, if that makes sense. So they really have, like, an uphill battle to, like, make it worth buying and playing. But I have a feeling, like you said, right, the Diablo thing, it definitely has that. And if they add, like, some sort of I don't know, like, they could do a lot. They could add, like, some roguelike mode or something, and they can do, like, online cross-play, cross-save, like they've been doing with everything. So there's a lot of potential for them to, like, elevate it. But if it's just the same thing remade in Unreal Engine 5 or just remade, it's not something which I'm going to be, like, too excited to play.
Well, they've already mentioned they're adding a new game mode where you can take control of Chup, which is the Avenue's protagonist, and see the story from his perspective. And they said major refinements to gameplay controls, along with the new story viewpoint. I don't know if that will help to the package, and they haven't gotten, like, the whatever refinements they're going to add to it. So, like, it's one of those things, like, hey, they announced it. They kind of gave it a brief description on what they're planning for it, but they haven't gotten to the specifics. So, like, I'm just, like, one of those people that's, like, you know, I'll maybe pick it up when it comes out. Like, hey, I did that for Fantasy Life, and I did not regret that purchase. It was just, like, one of those things that's, like, hey, it caught my interest. I'll definitely take the leap of faith, and I was rewarded for that. But but in terms of, like, this presentation is weird because Hino, the CEO, has been very vocal about his support for generative AI. And, like, even him acting as the host for this presentation, like, he's already, like, in an environment that's definitely using generative AI assets. In terms of, like, hey, like, you have him presenting this in, like, surrounded by an environment that's definitely, you know, it's definitely indicative, like, hey, this is definitely a generative AI environment that he's in when presenting this presentation. And there are definitely some trailers in this game, like, we won't really get into it because it's not really in our purview, but I believe there's, like, a Yo-Kai Watch new mobile thing that they announced, and they said, like, hey, it's going to be complementary to the existing Yo-Kai Watch mobile game that's still running in Japan. But, like, when they showed off a trailer for it, there's definitely a lot of telltale signs in that trailer that it was, like, all entirely generated through generative AI. And it's, like, that, because, like, a lot of things look off, and a lot of things in its trailer, like, are definitely telltale signs of generative AI being utilized. And it's, like, man, this fucking sucks, man. This does not look great. Like, and on top of that, like, the Level 5's April Fools was a generative AI trailer of, like, this hypothetical Level 5 amusement park, you know? And it's, like, I feel bad for the creatives on these projects that are, like, handmade projects, like Snack World Reloaded, you know, where just, like, you have a lot of, like, very talented people that are certainly involved in this project, but, you know, its management and its head CEO is very much all in and very pro generative AI, and even, like, posts on social media, like, lengthy social posts of, like, saying, hey, man, you know, I don't understand why people are so against generative AI. It's so, the potential it brings for us is, like, it's like people need to be more open about it. What are we doing, man? What are we fucking doing? But not just, like, that's why I'm very 50-50 on, like, hey, on Level 5. Like, I like that, like, a lot of their upcoming handmade, like, products and console games, and I do like that they have features that are, like, universal in terms of cross-save and cross-play in that regard, but it's so mired because they're in, like, this fucking shit, man.
It is interesting to see that. Like, all the different stances or postures that people take, and when I say people, you typically executives, you know, seat corner office, C-suite, because you have Level 5, like how you described, is, you know, very much like celebrating it in a way, and then you have others who are, like, very shy about it, and they're like, well, we're only going to use it for prototyping or for not intended to be final product, or we're only gonna, and it just, and everything in between. And then, of course, developers who say, like, here's our prototyping, we threw Bambi in as our placeholder image so that it could never be confused as a final texture or whatever. That's how we did things before AI, you know, placeholders existed. So completely on, you know, not on the wagon at all. So yeah, no, thanks for the reminder. I forgot that their CEO had taken that stance so explicitly.
My goat has been washed. What were we gonna type?
I mean, yeah, I'm not even gonna get to, like, Kazuma Kaneko. It's just,
oh yeah.
Fuck.
Most of the other headlines that at least we have listed here are a little bit smaller. So Fantasy Life, the girl who steals time, is coming to mobile this year with cross-save and cross-play. Inazuma 11 Re, which is the in-process remake of the first Inazuma 11 game, was already slated to release for PS5, Switch, and Steam. They've announced that it will also have a Switch 2 version. It is still slated for 2026, generically.
No longer coming to PS4, though. It was supposed to come to PS4. That's canned, and it's coming to Switch 2 now.
Okay.
I'm pretty surprised that Fantasy Life I is still I remember when game was still in development. I believe initially it was still supposed to come to mobile. I had no idea that they were still gonna release it on mobile.
Yeah. Even Inazuma was announced for mobile years ago, when it was called Road of Airs, I think it was called initially. That was supposed to be at one point it was PS4, Switch, iOS, and Android only. I think those were the initial platforms. I think that was the initial platform. So maybe they'll bring it there. But one thing I did notice is they still refer to the, what is it called, the Basario's something, the DLC, the major update which they did during the holiday season. They still call that DLC 1 everywhere. So I assume they are going to do another major update, because they've been hinting at it here and there, and I don't think they would have called it DLC 1, numbered 1 specifically, if that was the only expansion they were doing. So we might see more of that this year as well, maybe to coincide with the mobile release. But yeah, that is a paid game. It's not a free-to-play thing. It's the full game with touch controls or proper controller support. So I'm definitely going to add that to my coffee table collection for Fantasy Life I, to put it bluntly.
Mm-hmm. Another long, in-process game, Deca Police. Its platforms were also updated. So, Mikhail, correct me if I'm wrong. It was basically going to be Switch, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5. Now it's Switch 2, PlayStation 5, PC.
Yeah. They're basically slowly dropping PS4 support, and Switch makes sense because Japan, and Switch 2 also makes sense because that gives them some I believe that they've started doing one of the other headlines which we'll get to, which we can just finish off now, that they announced a retail version of Inazuma 11 Victory Road, which will have all the DLC up to the latest one. Level 5 refers to major updates as DLC, so it essentially has the newest DLC included, the newest update included, and it's releasing in June as a Switch 2 physical, not a game key card. So I assume doing it this way just lets them do one physical, because now anyone can buy that and they can play that on their Switch 1 or Switch 2. It's the cross-gen thing. So dropping, adding a Switch 2 version is good for longevity. And also because a lot of these games kind of run shit on Switch 1. Fantasy Life I is acceptable best case. So and it's really good on Switch 2. So I'm just happy they're doing that. And but Deca Police is one of the games that Josh was referring to as dev hell, right? We don't even have a year for that.
Yeah, no year. That was originally supposed to, but it was at first announced, it was supposed to come out in 2023. But it's been delayed, pushed back, and now it's just kind of delayed indefinitely, and who knows when. It's we're kind of back at where that's kind of level 5's modus operandi. Hey, Fantasy Life I used to be in this spot. Inazuma 11, Victory Road used to be in this spot. So Megaton Musashi, to some extent, used to be in this spot of they were all in dev hell. And now there's just new titles in development that have replaced that, those titles to be in dev hell. They also showed off first gameplay footage of this Yo-Kai Watch spiritual follow-up Holy Horror Mansion. We saw first gameplay footage of that, but I don't think that also has a release date or year as well in that regard. And
they even put kind of cheekily on their trailer for that at the very end, still a ways to go in terms of release window.
So I guess that's the release docket for level 5 is late in for this year, I believe. Really it in terms of new titles.
Yeah, that's another one which saw its platforms get new things get added, because it was initially just Switch, Then they added Switch 2, and it was like shown in the Nintendo Direct. Now it's also confirmed for PS5 and Steam. So like Layton and the new world of Steam is actually coming to Steam. That's the joke.
Hopefully that's a good Layton entry. Like I definitely want to play that on Steam.
Didn't they announce like Joe Hisaishi is doing the theme song?
Yeah, like it's like a collaboration with that and another artist. Yeah. And yeah, so hopefully that shapes up to be excellent.
And I think that covers it for anything in our purview for the level 5 craftsmanship stream. Level 5 vision, which is the title, craftsmanship, which is like the tagline for this specific stream. All right, the other streaming event was the III initiative stream, or initiative showcase. Basically a showcase put on by Evil Empire. Looks like the main thing, the first thing that we have listed here is not a surprise because it's the game that Evil Empire is currently working on, Castlevania Belmont's Curse, which was just announced earlier this year. So we got a new trailer shown for that. Adam, which of these trailers do you think is the most interesting out of these remaining five? Like, because on this podcast, we really can't go too deep into any individual trailer here. I guess probably Neverway is the one that I've seen the most like on social media about.
It seems like the most interesting reveal of this III initiative is one that doesn't really fit our coverage scope. It's from Sunset Visitor, the developers of Thousand Times Resist. So that's Prove You're Human, which if you're listening to this podcast, you probably have seen this. It's kind of like a team up between Sunset Visitor, which was the developer of Thousand Times Resist, and Black Tabby Games, which was the developer of Slay the Princess. So Black Tabby is publishing now. So they're kind of like this team up between these two kind of beloved indie, you know, houses for this new title, Prove You're Human. We haven't covered it because it's more of a like an adventure narrative game, horror game even, but not really an RPG, so it doesn't fit our scope. But that's
even 1000x Resist, it wasn't like I wrote a branching path for that, like an op-ed for that. Then I'll probably do the same for Prove You're Human,
yeah,
in that regard. But yeah, but it's just they aren't RPGs, full stop.
Yeah, but yeah, that out of all the stream reveals, that one seemed to be the one that was the most interesting. I didn't watch the stream live, but I guess it was basically what led off the stream, made the biggest splash, bunch of interviews I've seen pop up. For the stuff that we cover like more directly, just because it fits sort of our scope of our genre coverage, I know a lot of people are really, really excited for Alabaster Dawn. And I guess this is one of those things they've already been really open about. So this is the developer behind CrossCode. Alabaster Dawn is heading into early access on May 7th. However, they've been very open in saying it's going to be in early access for a while, at least 2 years, maybe longer.
Oh, wow.
So, okay. You know, it's one of those things where if you're the type of person who don't really mess with early access and you just wait for full releases, just, you know, put this on the back burner for now, for quite a while, or maybe just take it off the burner entirely, just come back to it later. But I know a lot of people are really excited for that. Yeah, Neverway is the kind of a horror pixel art RPG from the artist of Celeste, and that's coming out in October, so I've seen some excitement for that. And then there's also, I actually saw some kind of amusing posts about this, Valor Mortis, which is like a first-person Souls-like, that's what they call it, is coming out later this year, kind of an indie, again, first-person Souls-like. And I saw some people say, like, first-person Souls-like, just call it a Kingsfield-like, if that's what you're going to go for. So
yeah.
But yeah, that's coming out. I saw some, you know, some people are excited for that. And I've seen people say, you know, I've actually seen people say like Valor Mortis or Queen's Domain. If those are both coming out this year, kind of an interesting like Kingsfield like pairing. Even though I know Queen's Domain, I actually met with some of the developers making that at GDC. I actually didn't realize it's basically only like a 2-person dev team on that one. Very, very small.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. This one, I'm not sure for Valor Mortis, but yeah. Kingsfield-like, coming out later this year.
Alkahest is another one that was shown off. That's another first-person, you know, fantasy game.
So yeah, just to kind of run it down again, I know I kind of hopped from topic to topic there. The RPGs that we covered from this stream event, Castlevania, Alkahest, Alabaster Dawn, Neverway, Valor Mortis, And the one I actually haven't mentioned yet, which I've seen some excitement for, is a co-op pirate survival adventure game called Windrose, which actually launches next week in early access. So pirate game, I guess this was originally like going to be like an MMO, like massive online game, but they've kind of switched tact and decided to go with more like online co-op RPG survival thing. I've seen some excitement for it, but that again, another early access release this week.
Trailer is a little bit of whiplash for that one, because the first half is like action-based combat with like swashbuckling and, you know, muskets, and then in the back half there's like the building crafting survival mechanics where someone's like build a wall, build a flag, do like all the colored like pick and placement sort of mechanics, like, oh, okay, which I think is still a fun combo.
Yeah, it definitely has like the settlement building type component to it. Mm-hmm.
Yep. No, thank you for assisting with that, with the rundown there. And those two big, the Level 5 streaming event and the III streaming event were the two big things from this week. A few other just updates and dates before we sign off. Pillars of Eternity now has a formal turn-based mode available on Steam, GOG, and Xbox on PC. So, Pillars of Eternity, when it first launched, was real-time with pause. Pillars of Eternity 2 Deadfire, if I remember right, it was real-time with pause and had kind of like a beta turn-based, like it got added in later after the fact. And then turn-based kind of got more popularized when Larian took off a little bit more with the Divinity series, and of course, Baldur's Gate 3 went from the conventional real-time with pause of that series to turn-based. And then so, turn-based kind of got backported into some of the older games from different developers, and Pillars of Eternity now also can be played fully turn-based. Hopefully I got that sequence of events right. As for some other dates, Astrophel, this is definitely like one of those games. It says inspired by RPGs of the early 2000s, so like Gothic, is going to be releasing on an open play test. So not really releasing, just we'll have an open play test on April 17th, I guess, as part of Steam's upcoming Medieval Fest. So basically like an open beta of sorts for Astrophel. And then Fuga, Melodies of Steel will also get a mobile version releasing at some point this summer. Oh, that runs it down for this week. Let me kind of just take a peek at what we might see for next week.
Pragmata, right? Or was that?
Oh, yeah.
I think
Pragmata's in 2 days.
Is it really?
Pragmata.
Is it that close? What?
I think so. Unless you're getting the Switch 2 version. That's like an extra week.
Mongol Star Dive. There we go.
No. We don't play Genshin like.
Pragmata's in 5 days as of the time there's recording.
Yeah.
Also, a game coming out next week that I know I've seen a fair bit of excitement for is Dosa Divas, which is kind of an indie or smaller publisher, smaller developer. It's from Outer Loop Games and Outer Sloth. Kind of like we've talked about it before, it has like Octopath mechanics, has a little bit of like Paper Mario, you know, action combat, you know, button press combat in the turn-based system. You play as like two women who are like making dosas. You have like a weird like mech that you drive. It's kind of an interesting combination of things, but that's coming out next week.
Hades 2 is releasing on PS5 and Xbox next week. It's, you know, I forgot that it was only on Switch and PC until that point. So cool. Well, whatever you listen to this podcast on, whatever podcast service, leave us a like, leave us a rating. We'd love to see those. Bookmark our website, rpgsite.net. Join our Discord, discord.gg/RPGsite. You should be able to find RPG Site on social media. Just search for RPG space site, S-I-T-E, and you should see us there. Until you hear from us next time, stay safe, take care, and we'll talk to y'all later.